Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. I'm Jeff the Flow Floro, and I'm here with Scott Sill, and we have a really great show for you tonight. We'll get to that in a moment, but first, I wanted to ask Scott, what's he been up to?
Well, the latest thing I was checking out was the folks over at Electroharmonix sent out a Ravis sitar pedal. I was playing with that thing till like 1 in the morning. It's ridiculous. It just takes, you know, I was playing a 66 335, which is like a classic, you know, vintage sound, and then All of a sudden I'm sitting there in the middle of India. So, very cool little pedal. I can't wait to demo it. It'll be coming up soon. So, and then I'm shooting the demo on the Vibramate
It basically just, if you're not familiar with it, with Bigsby's, you know, traditionally you have to curl the string around to lock it onto the Bigsby. This thing allows you to mount the strings faster. It's when you see the demo, it'll be clear. But basically, I use them on my Les Pauls. They're really handy and they work really well.
Yeah, I'll be showing that and then how to traditionally, you know, string a Bigsby without dinging your paint job, which I must sadly admit I have done once before I realized to bend your strings. So we all make that mistake. So hopefully I'll prevent somebody from ruining a beautiful top of a guitar at some point. So and if you want to see those, you know, you can find those on my YouTube channel, Selenium, or You can search my name.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff, so what have you been up to?
Well, I found my original Fuzz Face I bought in 1967. It's a gray one. It's not one of the red colored ones. It's a mellower sound, so I'm having it checked out. I'm pretty sure it's one of the germanium ones. So I'm just cleaning it up, and I'll probably post some pictures of that shortly, and at some point I will demo it. I have that in the red one, so we can do a comparison on those. So that's coming up.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of comparisons, something else to mention, which if any of you are Wah-Wah fans, we had Del Casher on as our original guest, our first guest. I am setting up a time to meet with him to do a shootout between a Clyde McCoy, a Crybaby, the original Wah-Wah that he has, the prototype, a Wah-Wah that he is hoping to put his name to that actually sounds, he thinks, the closest in 40 years to his original Wah, and then possibly any other Wahs that I may have. So maybe I might borrow your Joe Bonamassa.
Yes.
You're up for it.
Yes. So, okay, no problem.
Anyhow, so let's kick into our guests. And that reminds me that you will also see a upcoming demo of a couple of our guest speakers, the Eric Johnson Alnico signature speaker and their governor speaker from a company called Eminence.
Yes.
And today we have Anthony Lucas, the senior lab tech from Eminence, the guy that you call when you have problems, questions, concerns, or what speaker to get. Welcome, Anthony.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
So, Anthony, can you tell us about the company Eminence? It's an American company, and tell us how it got started.
Okay. We're a family-owned company, and very proud of that. We started up in 1966. Bob Goff is our founder. He's a former engineer at CTS, which many of the listeners might be familiar with. He chose Eminence is a very small community. We only have about 2,500 to 3,000 people. He chose the area because he thought it'd be a good place to get workers, and it was also centralized with he had contacts in the north and south of our area, so he thought it'd be good logistically. And he started there on a contract or on a promise with Everett Hull from Ampeg to build 3 speakers a week. That was his original goal, just 3 18-inch speakers. And he partnered up with a couple of guys a year or two later and realized they had to have more income to support the 3 families instead of one. So they went into a larger production and got a space in Eminence to do that. I think the original building was around 6,000 square feet, and that was the original location was in a different spot than it is now. It was across town. Eminence is about only about a mile wide, and when they decided to expand again, they moved to the location we're at now, and in 1972. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was a 32,000. The original building was 32,000 square feet, and today we've just expanded as needed over the years, and today it's nearly 100,000 square feet.
Wow!
Wow!
How many people work at Eminence?
There's about between 130 and 140 employees right now. At our biggest capacity, in the mid-90s, when car audio was 40% of our business, we had over 200 employees in 2 shifts, and we made over 10,000 speakers today. We've lost that. The car audio business has all went to China. We completely lost all of that business, and so we've cut back to 1 shift and the smaller workforce. And I think we can produce somewhere around 5,000 today.
That's still pretty impressive. That's a lot of speakers.
Yeah, that's a lot of speakers. I wonder sometimes where they all go.
Well, I kind of figured you'd only need to produce, you know, by your calculations of 3 speakers a day to support Bob, I think you'd only need to be 500 today.
Yeah. But thankfully, we got a few more people to support now.
So you're a guitar player, and so how did you get started with Eminence? And, you know, tell us about your guitar world.
Yeah, I grew up in Eminence. I'm from there originally, and I went to Eminence High School. Many people don't even know that the town is named Eminence. That's we took the name of the town rather than the other way around. I grew up there and always knew about Eminence, but I didn't know really what they did on a world scale. I knew they built speakers. But I needed a job. I started there in 1994. I needed a job, and I came in as a temporary employee and just eventually got hired into production and worked my way up through the company. But my guitar playing goes back to high school days. I started playing in high school, and truly, I'm just a hack today. And we're exposed to so many great players in our industry. Sometimes it can be frustrating as a guitar player that doesn't get to play every night or every day and practice that or do it for a living. It can be frustrating to watch the great players do what they do. But then I get to realize that I'm getting to create a product or recommend a product to these great players and make them sound the best they can. So that's very satisfying.
Yeah, I have to say with things like YouTube where you in the search of about 1 minute you can find some 8-year-old that can ridiculously school us all.
That's right.
It can sometimes be a little sickening, but it's pretty amazing to see what other people are doing. I was watching the video on Eminence, the history. It's about a 50-minute video on YouTube. I think it's kind of interesting to talk about how the company took you from a temp employee and got you to where you're at. Can you talk about that and how they definitely try to promote within and all that?
Like I said, we're a family-owned business and very small, close-knit, and we try when it's possible. We try to promote within, and that's a huge plus for somebody like me. Like I said, I started out as a temporary employee. They just used me because they needed. But we get really busy in the summertime. They needed extra help, so I got in there and worked my way in, and I just tried to learn all I could and volunteered to do different jobs, and they could see I was eager to learn and work, and they rewarded me for that. I just learned all I could until I was eventually hired into our engineering department. We call it the lab. And 1998, And through that, I just started as building and testing samples that go out to our OEM customers and even our branded product line. I'll talk more specifically about that in a minute. But I just learned how to build a speaker from top to bottom and learned how to test them and learned all the terms you need to learn in engineering for speakers. And I just eventually worked myself up to designing speakers and doing all of our customer support.
Now,
and something else. And, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, with doing customer support, I mean, you know, if somebody was to call you up and say, okay, I've got a Marshall 100-watt head, how do you help mm-hmm. them find the speaker that they should be putting in their cabinet if they're replacing speakers?
Well, the first thing I have to do is rule out all the misconceptions they learn reading online. And there's so many misconceptions about power handling and what they have to have, what they think they have to have for their amp. I try to get a feel for how they want to improve their tone or what they don't like about their tone now. And then my knowledge of how our speakers sound, I can help them get in the right direction to the speaker they need. Because so many people think that this speaker choice is only good for this particular application or that particular application, and they might rule it out when it could be the best speaker for them. They don't really think about the tonal characteristics of the speaker or what they're actually trying to prove. They're so worried about what specs do I need to follow, what guidelines do I need to follow, how do I go about this by the book, rather than thinking how specifically, what am I listening to, and what would make me sound better, what characteristics will improve my tone. That's what I try to get people to focus on.
So if that person was to say, okay, I wanted to sound like Hendrix versus a Slash, where would you send them with your speakers?
Yeah. Well, that makes a little bit of sense because I'm familiar with their tones and their music, but it's really still not specific because the whole gear chain matters. If person A and person B are playing the same gear, there's because the topic is so subjective, they might pick two different speaker tones to get there.
Okay. Maybe we should kick into you have four different lines, and maybe we can kind of just go between talk about those four lines, because when you start to go into them, there's a lot of speakers. So how does, you know, someone tell what they should go? Or what speaker they should pick. So let's talk about, you know, the Patriot, Redcoat, Legend, and Signature. Let's start with Signature, being there's only one speaker there, and there's, I think, going to be a fascinating story with that.
So, okay. You want me to just tell about that?
Let's talk about the Signature with the Eric Johnson speaker.
Okay. We were approached by George Alessandro. He'd been working with Eric for several years, was my understanding. George Recone a lot of speakers for Eric and built him cabs and they just tweaked with his tone all the time, and he really respected George's input and he would listen to George, what George had to say. And so George approached us and he said, you know, Eric's interested in possibly doing a Signature speaker and he's looking for a manufacturer to do that. Would you all be interested? And of course we jumped on the opportunity. And their complaint was that Eric only liked vintage speakers. I mean, he's known for vintage tone, obviously.
Yeah, he's definitely regarded as the king of that.
Yeah, highly regarded as that. And they were having trouble. The speakers that he liked were very expensive because they were so old and hard to find on eBay or wherever they were looking for them. If you were recon them, they were hard to find the right components to do that. It was just difficult to do this night in and night out with Eric. He's pretty hard on speakers because he plays so loud, and it was getting impossible to do. And a new speaker would solve all that because he could order it off the shelf.
Right.
So we took that challenge head on, and it was a 2-year process trying to satisfy his tone needs, and it's. The project shifted at different times. We started with the original platform was an inch and a half voice coil Alnico. And it took us six to 8 months probably before he actually got one. He's like, hey, yeah, this is really, really good. I think this can go somewhere. And then he said, and we were thinking at the time, yeah, we got an approval here. We're done. We're kind of relieved. But he said, okay, it's a great speaker, but let's make it better. So, how do you argue with Aaron Johnson? So, we then took it to an inch and three quarter platform, inch and three quarter voice coil, which, in theory, that should give it more low end and roll off the highs a little bit just because of the more mass. And it also improves the power handling as well. I don't think that was a concern for him, but that's what it does. So we went to the inch and three quarter Alnico, and then we just started tweaking it to death. I mean, there was a lot of tweaks after that, because at some points, if you went in the wrong direction, you had to go back and make sure you was on the right page. Like I said, the whole entire process took 2 years.
How does the size of the voice coil affect the sound? Because I know in his demo, he talks about that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to the voice coil, actually. There's the form of material. We use paper and another form of paper called Nomex. And then we use a polyimide film called Kapton. Now, the Kapton is used for higher power handling, but it's also brighter and it's the most likely to get harsh on the highs. The paper is the warmest, but it doesn't handle as much power. Nomex is right there in the middle. It's kind of a good combination of both. It handles decent power and it's still warm. Eric wanted the warmest. He swore by paper. So that's, we never changed that. And the diameter of the voice coil has to do with the power handling. The power handling is the main objective with the voice coil diameter. Of course, with the guitar speaker, they don't have to handle 400 or 500 watts like a bass or pro audio speaker. So, inch and three quarters seems to be the most common, and inch and a half is pretty prevalent.
How many versions of speakers do you think you created for him before he? I mean, just as an estimation.
Oh wow, that's a good question. I'd say a couple dozen.
Oh, I actually thought the number would be larger. Actually.
Well, it takes a long to turn it around because you got to get feedback, and then there's hopefully some thought process, and then actually designing the sample and getting it built, tested, and I mean, there was a lot of times where we didn't even send it to him because we was like, no, that's not it. We can't send him this one. So I'm just talking about the ones we sent.
Yeah.
That he tried out. And there was some frustration at times. At times I thought the whole project was just going to die because, you know, he would get frustrated if we weren't hearing him and going in the wrong direction because he doesn't really understand speaker design. And we don't necessarily understand how discerning his ear is, so sometimes we get frustrated. So it was work, but it pays off.
Now, with the Eric Johnson speaker, you said the thing that he came in with is you wanted Alnico. I mean, what would be the reason why he would want Alnico versus ceramic or Neomag or anything like that?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not trying to put him down here. I'm not sure that he knows exactly what it does. He just knows that's what type of speaker he likes. But I think the reason he likes it is because Alnico offers a natural compression. As it heats up, it's not as strong a magnet as it was when it's cool. It kind of loses some of its magnetism as it gets hotter and hotter. Now you could eventually demagnetize an Alnico magnet with enough heat, but that's beyond the operating range. It's not something we have to worry about. But as it heats up, it naturally loses magnetism and as that natural compression when you push it, and that's what people like about it. A ceramic magnet won't do that.
Now, I mean, silly question, but I mean, as it cools down, does it gain that magnetism back?
Yeah, it returns to normal on a cool stand.
Okay.
But like I said, you're not getting into the levels that would harm it.
Did he use any special kind of cone material? I mean, I know you guys are doing some hemp cones, I think, or something like that.
We didn't use the hemp cone. That was probably what took the most, just trying different cones. But we knew what type of cone he wanted, basically. But there's a lot of those types of cones. So there was some trial and error. There was a lot of trial and error. That's probably the most that we changed was the cone during the process. But no, we didn't go into hemp. It was the same basic type of cone, but with many different trials of it. There's many different modes of full paper cones.
It definitely has to be exciting that you guys have his signature speaker. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah. I mean, we pretty much feel if we can please Eric, because he has such a discerning ear, then we can pretty much please anybody with our products.
So can you talk about, since we're talking about Alnico, can you talk about the Neomags and how those kind of relate?
Or what's the difference?
What's the difference between those, ceramic and Alnico?
Okay. The Neo is a rare earth material. It was once only used in appliances and then the newer hybrid cars, that's where it's used in abundance. The speaker industry is just a very, very small part of the world supply of Alnico. We don't use very much of it as a whole. But speaker manufacturers started using it maybe late 90s, early 2000s. And it's just made to be a lighter weight speaker design. And if you can imagine guys playing 4x12 cabinets and even think about bass players. Am I allowed to talk about bass players on here?
Absolutely.
with their 8x10 cabinets, if you can imagine getting rid of 8 pounds per speaker, that would soon add up over 4 or 8 speakers.
Yeah, that's significant. It is significant.
Cause a bass player to become a singer.
I'm sorry?
I was just making a joke. It caused a bass player to become the singer.
Oh, okay. but the Neo, basically you could say that for 10% of the mass of a ceramic magnet, that's what's equivalent in magnetic strength to a Neo. So like a 100-ounce ceramic magnet, it would only take 10 ounces of Neo to do that. Now, the downside to Neo is the cost. It's a rare earth material, and it's very expensive. So you're paying for weight save.
Are those the type of magnets you guys use for the pedal steel players that where you guys are advertising? You have some speakers that are lighter weight for them.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We have a new line of pedal steel guitar, 12-inch to 15-inch, and they use the neodymium.
I have definitely have to ask because my dad is way into pedal steel, and so he's always looking for the elusive JBL, 15-inch. That's his speaker. He thinks it's like the best thing. What do you guys have that is, recreates that sound?
Well, we have an EPS 15C. That's our 15-inch pedal guitar speaker. I don't know that it's completely a JBL design. It does have the aluminum dust cap, which accentuates the high end. But we went with a 3-inch voice coil platform there, it's a plenty of power handling for the steel guitar players. It's still lightweight and it has a low moving mass, which improves the efficiency of the speaker. And we did a lot of field testing with the speakers, sending them to OEM manufacturers and a lot of the industry's most renowned steel players, and they liked it, so we brought it to market, basically.
Very cool. Now your other series, Patriot, Redcoat, and Legend. So I assume the Patriot are American style speakers.
That's correct.
So when you go into the Patriot series, there's like 20 speakers. Can you tell us what's the difference, and you know, how, you know, how do I determine, besides size and ohmage, which speaker do I want to look at?
Okay, well, let me go back just a little bit in our history. From 1966 up till 1999, we were just an OEM supplier, which means that we just made speakers to other companies' specifications, and they bought in bulk, and we just supplied it. It didn't necessarily, some of the products did have eminence on them, but it didn't have to, and in most cases it did not. In 1999, we launched our distribution product line that you see on the website today, and the reason we did that was to raise awareness of eminence, raise our brand awareness, and that was both to help us and to help our OEM manufacturers that we're making for, because if the public's seeing eminence loaded in these cabinets and they don't know who it is, then their perception is low. But if we made a name for ourselves and raised that awareness, then we could hopefully raise the value of the product. And so we started stocking products, and we originally came out with the Legend line. And the Legend series is basically just, we didn't really copy any of our OEM designs and put them out there, but we did, they are similar to speakers that we've been making for companies for a lot of years, and that's why we called them the Legends. And they've done very well, but it wasn't we didn't have as much of the guitar market as we'd like to have, and there was just a few speakers in it. So we decided to get crazy in 2004, and that's when we launched the Patriot and Redcoat series. We tried to take the world by storm with it, and that's why there's so many models. We just felt that we had a lot to offer, and that we wanted to cover all the tonal ranges, where nobody could come to eminence and say they couldn't find something for themselves to meet their tonal needs. And we used the Patriot and Redcoat series. We thought that was a cool thing because we could do both types of speaker. We could do the Fender Cleans or the Marshall Dirt. And basically what that is, and I get asked all the time, well, what does that mean, American or British? And it's kind of something that I think we, all of us, the guitar players, have pigeonholed speakers or amps or any type of gear into. And the American tones are basically, they're often cleaner and brighter. And then you got your British tones, they're more mid-aggressive. They have a lot more harmonic detail, and then they have the nice, sweet breakup crunch. So when you're trying to pick a speaker, like I said previously, I mean, I think it's best to have an idea of how you want to improve your tone, what characteristics would make your tone even better, and then with the help of our tone guides and our tools online, or even a phone call or an email, what we know about our own speakers, we can help get you in the right direction. And I mean, there's any genre of music, you might want a warmer tone or a fatter tone or whatever the case may be. Maybe you're not getting enough mid-range cut or enough high end. I hear a lot of people say, well, my tone sounds muddy when I hit the low E, just for one example. Well, that tells me that your speaker's not reproducing enough low end, so you need a speaker that does that better. And that's one frequent comment that I receive where I can address.
If you want to improve your low end, are you trying to change the magnet, or are you trying to change the cone material or the ribbing on the cone? Where would you go when you're trying to do something like that?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind for me is more voice coil diameter. It's a higher mass, which should give you more bass response. It could be the magnet. It just depends on what the reference point is. We try to familiarize ourselves with the industry's amps and products, and even our competitor speakers, and to where we have a good familiarity with the industry and how to help people in that regard.
Question for you. Now, I know on the Patriot, we had talked before a little bit because I'm referring to older speakers, because I was a big fan on my Fenders with JBLs, and you had mentioned that the Commonwealth has that kind of a sound that was characteristic of a JBL. Do you guys make a speaker that has a similar sound to like an Altec?
No, we've had some requests for the Altec. I wouldn't say that we have a direct replacement for it.
Uh-huh.
It seems to be a niche market. So in order for us to stock a product, there has to be quite a bit of demand to justify it. I mean, there's just a lot involved with bringing a new product to market.
I have
the demand to justify it.
Yeah, no, the Altecs are, not too many people remember the Altecs.
Yeah, I mean, I hear about it all the time, and it's not a daily basis, of course, or we'd have it, but we do get a lot of requests for it, but it seems to be a small niche, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Now, your Commonwealth, which is more like the JBL, is that an Alnico?
No, it's a ceramic. We would love to do an Alnico, or better yet, a Neo, but we currently don't have the tooling in the right size to do that, so mm-hmm. we just tried to emulate it as best we could with what we had, and hopefully for you guys lugging that stuff around, that'll come someday.
Yeah,
in a lighter weight.
The Alnicos are definitely heavy. We have a question in the chat room asking about your hemp cone, and they want to know, how does hemp differ from paper as far as speaker breakup and time, or how does it affect the sound?
That's a good question. Hemp is, I mean, it's still a paper. I mean, most guitar speakers are just one mold. It's a full mold, and it's all paper cone. Well, hemp is also a type of paper, but it offers, it's stiffer than the more traditional pulps, and it produces just a really clean, warm, smooth tone. It has a lot of mid-emphasis, but it's a different kind of mid. If you've never heard of hemp cone, it's probably a different kind of mid-range than you're used to. It's not a cutting, biting, crisp mid. It's just a big, round, warm, smooth, mellow mid. And they're really a great speaker for taming a bright amp. Anytime somebody says, my amp, my guitar, whatever the case may be, it's just too bright, too harsh, it's ear-piercing, ice-picky. We've all heard those terms. I'll immediately think of the hemp cone speakers, and that might be a possible solution for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people are scared when they hear that it's clean because they still want their breakup. But what the hemp offers is you still can get the breakup from your amp. And actually, in some cases, it can be better if the speaker's not involved in that, because your amp's designed to break up a certain way. A speaker breaking up, I mean, it's hard to get a speaker to break up in a musical way, because you're almost asking the cone is misbehaving actually when breakup occurs, and we're asking that to do that in a very pleasing musical way with abundant harmonic detail.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking something uncontrolled to act controlled. And so that's hard to do. Not that speakers don't. There's tons of speakers with great breakup. But sometimes it's with a hemp cone, you can still get that sweet breakup with your amp. And it's actually a nicer breakup because it stays clean. The speaker stays clean and more articulate. We've all heard the woody term. And I think that's what the hemp cone does. It offers that nice woody texture.
Now, do I need a doctor's note to get a hemp cone? I'm just kidding.
No, sir. We took all the good stuff out.
Because there's an amp doctor here in Burbank, California, so I could go to him. So. Since we're talking about cones, let's can you explain how the ribbing on a cone will change your tone and break up?
Well, it's a hard thing to pinpoint. What the ribbing does is it adds strength to the cone. Without it, the cone would just break up too easily. It'd probably be a non-musical sounding cone. But it's hard to compare, because to compare just that one variable, everything else about the cone, would have to be exactly the same to say, okay, that's what exactly what the ribs do. And there's really not a way to do that because everything else about the cone is not always the same.
Mm-hmm. We have a question in our chat room asking about the paper cones. Is there any cotton fiber in there?
No, I don't believe there's any cotton in it. Actually, just to explain a little further about what we do, we don't actually produce cones. We don't make our own cones, and that's typical for a speaker manufacturer. We have several vendors all over the world that we purchase cones from, and that's their specialty, to make speaker components and cones. They have their own process to do that. I probably can't tell you everything about a cone.
Well, that was one thing I wanted to ask you was, from watching your video, the one thing it looked like to me, I mean, other than you're saying cones, it looks like you guys make like every intricate part at your facility there, which is one thing I saw when I toured Fender's factory, which I did not realize that they made everything other than they don't do the plating on their metal parts. Is that true with you guys? Do you make like all your metal parts and everything?
We don't make all of them. Our baskets, our frames are purchased. We use two different types, cast aluminum and stamped steel frames. They're purchased. Now, we do some stamping to the frames. We might do some modifications like adding a step or a terminal hole or something like that. We also purchase the pole piece, the part inside the voice coil that forms the magnetic gap. We purchase those in different heights. It's just easier to purchase from a vendor that specializes in that. But all the plates in the magnetic motor, we do punch out at the factory, and we do make them because we use different diameters, different thicknesses, and we do that in house. And what I mean by that is every speaker, the magnetic motor consists of a top plate that goes between the frame and the magnet, and then you have your magnet, and then there's a back plate at the very back of the speaker, where most people would see associate the backplate level of cosmetic parts. And the backplate is attached. What you can't see is the pole piece. The pole piece is centered on the backplate, and that's what goes up through the ID and the front plate and forms the magnetic gap.
Interesting.
If you guys could see my hands, I'm drawing it with my hands. It'd be better if you could see my hands.
Well, I mean, I you can see a lot of those parts when you watch your video, and it goes through.
Yeah,
it goes
exactly.
Through the whole process of making a speaker. It's quite interesting, actually.
And while we're on the video, I just like to plug that a minute. I'm very pleased with how that video turned out. We actually did that last year. We had what we called a vendor summit, and we wanted to work with our vendors and have them in for a day and just talk to them. And we decided to make a company profile video, and that was all done in-house. Our marketing guy, Kobe Stein, he did that by himself. He did all the shooting and all that and putting it together. And so we decided, I mean, it turned out so well, we decided to use it as a marketing tool. And it's got interviews with some of the great people that have made the company what it is today. There's some very interesting interviews and old pictures. And then we also do a company tour within the video, and we just explain every department and how through the whole process how a speaker's made. And it's a long video. Like you said, it was 45 to, it turned out 45 to 50 minutes long, and that's, I guess it's hard for somebody to sit down and watch, but I encourage people to check it out when they get the opportunity, because we're always getting, we get a lot of requests for tours, and I wish we could accommodate every one of them because we're very proud of what we do there at Eminence. And it's just not possible to have everybody in and take the time to show them everything we want to show them. And that video is a very good way to get that done. Not that we don't want to have people in, but it's just that's what we do. I mean, it shows everything we do in the factory.
Yeah, we just so everybody, our listeners. We posted that today on our Facebook page, the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, link
cool.
to that video, so it's there. And then you can also catch it at www.eminence.com. I think there's a link over there from your
there is a link.
Yeah, and we have it on our Flow Guitar Enthusiast site also.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, the one thing, you know, besides showing you how the speaker's made and going through the entire company, the overall thing or feeling I got from watching that video, which I thought was really nice, was it really gives you the impression that Eminence is an employee-driven company, which is nice to see. You know, sometimes people don't feel that that's the case with the company they work at, and it was good to see that that's what it appears to be there at Eminence.
Yeah, it is very much so. We're a very close-knit group, and I mean, like I said earlier, the whole community is, and it's no different there at Eminence. So we believe in the Southern hospitality and the sweet tea. We want to show off what we do because we're very proud of it. And
I want to talk about some of the new technology that's coming out from you guys. So the first one we'll talk about is the flux density modulation speaker, or the what you call the FDM technology. Can you tell us about
I'm afraid.
Can you tell us about that and what it does?
Okay. Yeah, we want to believe that this is the most innovative thing that's happened to a speaker since the speaker was made. Not sure why we didn't think of it years ago. Obviously, the guitar players, everybody's going to understand that everybody wants the guitar player to turn down. But as a guitar player, we don't want to turn down because we can't get our tone in. And that happens when we're gigging, in the recording studio, a number of places. And what this speaker allows you to do is actually turn down the volume through the speaker. The speaker has a built-in knob on the back of it. And you can get to the sweet spot on your amp and lower the volume with the speaker. And what we're basically doing with the technology is throwing away magnetism, so the speaker's not as efficient as it is when the knob's at full output. And there's a whole range, within the knob, there's a whole range of tone and volume. We have some demos up on our website of each extreme. It's showing you the lowest output versus the highest output. But there's also positions in between that you can get tone and volume out of as well. Like, I have one, I'm using the Maverick. We have two models, the Maverick and the Rainmaker. The Maverick's the Patriot model, and the Rainmaker's the Redcoat model. And I use the Maverick in one of my cabs, and I just set it at half and leave it alone.
Right. It's interesting. It's definitely cool to see. So, how did that idea come about? I mean, obviously we all have that problem about, you know, we always being told to turn down, but I mean, kind of, who came up with the brilliant idea of accomplishing it this way?
It just came about through several conversations, I mean, internally and with different musicians, and just basically small talk, and we finally got, it just hit us one day, and we're like, I think we can do something about this. We can actually create this, and it just took off from there.
And
like you said, I mean, everybody needs it. And one of the complaints we always heard from the players is with a lot of different attenuation methods, they lose their feel. They don't feel natural. They don't feel like you're playing a guitar anymore. They color the tone. Just a number of different comments. And what we're doing is all within the speaker. So we're not changing the fact that you've got your guitar plugged into an amp playing through a speaker. That's all remaining the same. There's nothing digital in the design. It's all analog. So you don't lose that feel, and it colors your tone very little. And something else it does that's really neat is, it's just how our ear operates naturally. When you turn down the volume of the speaker, the way the parameters change, it actually enhances the low end, and we have a frequency response curve showing how that operates on our website. But the low end, when you get all the way to the lowest output of the speaker, the low end is actually amplified. But the way our ears work, we don't hear bass frequencies at lower volumes as well. So your ear actually needs that enhancement, and that's what the speaker does, and it and makes it sound the same. It makes it sound as if it's not changing at all.
Let me ask you a question, Anthony, about that. Let's say that you're using an amp and you have one of these speakers in there, and you're distorting the amp and you're distorting the speaker. So there's the speakers, the part of that sound is distortion of the speaker. When you attenuate the when you lower the magnetism, does the speaker still stay dirty at the lower volume, or is it actually, because that's the problem with power attenuators. When you pull a power soak or something like that, you lower it down, you're not pushing the speaker anymore. So you're getting the amp distortion, but you're not getting the speaker distortion. So when you turn that the flux density modulation down, the speaker still kind of is distorting at the same characteristic?
No, okay. The speaker's not pushed as much, but I don't know that that's an ideal situation, that you'd want it to break up, because you're at the sweet spot of your amp. If you're at the sweet spot, it should be saturating the way you desire anyway. You probably don't want the speaker distortion.
Oh, okay, because I mean, I know some people are into... I like that brown sound, which you push the power tubes. It doesn't necessarily, with a speaker clipping less, I find it articulates more. So you get, especially when you're playing fast notes, it's better. But some people like to distort the speaker too because of the harmonics and, you know, especially when they're going for feedback and stuff.
Yeah, you're still getting the tonal characteristics of the speaker. You're still getting harmonic content. I don't think people really like speaker breakup as much as they think they do.
Okay.
Because, I mean, think about it. At what point do you know that it's the speaker or it's the amp? I mean, you don't without some sophisticated equipment to measure that. I don't know that you really do. And I think if you compare a speaker being overdriven without the attenuation versus at the same spot on your amp versus the attenuated speaker that's not breaking up but your amp is at the sweet spot, I think you're going to like the lower output better.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
Can you tell us about the new product you have called the Defender and what that does?
Okay, I don't really deal with that. That's a separate entity, kind of. But I can tell you a little bit about it. It's made to protect the speaker. It can be in a system. It's like no other product. I always like to use analogies to describe a product, and I can't really do it with this one because it's so unique. But it's just a circuitry that limits the voltage going into your speaker that's drawn from the amp, and it keeps it from harming the speaker. It goes into a protect mode, and you can set these protections. You can set the parameters of this. And it just keeps you from blowing your speaker when it, like with a clip signal or just flat out pushing it too hard. It just limits what the amp's given to it. And a lot of people ask, well, where's the heat going? Well, it's not going anywhere. There's no heat transfer. It's just not asking the amp to do as much work.
Well, how does that differ from like a power soak? Because basically your amp is still, it's cranking out that, you know, that power, the watts are going into that device, and I see there's heat sinks on it, so it doesn't translate that to heat?
Well, it's still under heat. I can't really explain all the technical stuff behind it. I'll have to get the guy in charge of that. He's Josh Martin at the factory. He's in charge of the Defend. I don't really deal with the support on that product.
Because it's cool that it's programmable. I know you can dial it up.
Yeah, you just hook it right to your computer, and then it's got some... you can program it right there on your computer, and then connects the USB. When you get it programmed and all the settings done in it, you can hook it back to your cabinet. And if you heard something that was a bit off, or something you didn't like, you can go back in and change that, tweak.
Okay.
Or if you don't understand any of that, we can recommend it for you.
Now, we actually have another question off of our chat room, and they're asking, recone or replace the speaker? What do you recommend? And maybe that might go along with, you know, upgrading an amp. I'm talking about, what instead of buying a new amp, buying a new speaker. Can you maybe cover those kind of topics?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It depends on the speaker, really, and how available it is. There's a couple different factors. Really, this might sound funny because I work for a speaker company. I don't know that much about. I know how to recone a speaker. I don't know what it costs. If you can't do it yourself, obviously you have to pay labor on that. You have to pay the shipping to get it there, to get it to the place that's working on it. And you also got to consider how available or how close to original can they get this, versus how much does a new speaker that I might like even more cost. So there's a lot to weigh out, and it's a tough call. Because it kind of makes me say, and I know it makes other people say it because they commented on it, if I don't recone this, then I got this great frame and magnet, and I just got to throw it in the trash. But in some cases, that's the only way you can do cost effectively. Our stance on it is, with stamped steel speakers, we find, and that's most of our guitar speakers, we find that it's more cost effective just to purchase new rather than recone. With a cast frame, a cast aluminum frame, more professional grade, it's a lot more expensive. The frame's a lot more expensive. The magnet's usually bigger, so that adds more expense. And it probably makes more sense to get that recone. And we offer, actually for our stock products, and mostly Pro Audio, we do offer recone kits, stock recone kits. Now, there are services out there, and we have a list of them I can point you to on our website that are reputable reconing services. That's what they do. And they can match the parts very closely, and they might get you near original to what you had just by the resources they have to get the components.
No. We're at the end of our show. I just wanted to point out you can get more information from www.eminence.com. Also, they're on Twitter at We Are Eminence. And do you have a Facebook page?
Yes, we do. Yeah, okay. It's just Eminence.
Eminence. Okay, so Eminence on Facebook too.
Yeah, and you have quite a few sound clips online of your speakers. You have you even have like a tech blog, I think, with you, right?
Yeah, we do have it available. It doesn't seem like it's taken off. I mean, I don't know if it's our fault or people just aren't noticing it, but we do have that there, but I haven't seen any activity on it. Most people contact us either by phone or they email info@eminence.com. That's my direct email, info@eminence.com. They're welcome to email me anytime with a speaker-related question. And then some people even drop us questions on our Facebook page.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for taking the time. I know that you're out there in Kentucky. It's about midnight there for you right now. So
it's been my pleasure.
Hopefully the weather is not too crazy with all the craziness going on out there in Oklahoma and all that.
We need to keep those guys in our thoughts and prayers. That's a terrible situation.
Absolutely. Well, definitely want to thank you for coming on the show. Next week we're going to have our Music Education Roundtable with Nick Stubbs from USC and Alan Hines from the Musicians Institute. So we'll be speaking to those two guys and talking about the different methods for teaching people guitar and going beyond just your guitar teacher at the local guitar store.
Yes. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night. We'll see you next week.